Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com, code program.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, the tennis has been all right today, but it's more the tennis that is to come that I feel like we are going to end up talking about here on the Tennis Podcast tonight. Because during Prime Video's coverage, Catherine reeled off some of the matches that we have to look forward to over the next few days in the third round. And it was quite something, particularly in the WTA side, on the women's side. I mean, actually, mostly on the bloke side, it's not that interesting, but the women's matchups in the next round are amazing. What about today then? Because Catherine and Matt have reconvened with me, and we're sort of halfway through the first match of the night session, and I have to say, it looks like Coco Gauff is not going to last much longer because Sloane Stephens is putting on a show. What was your standout moment of today, Catherine? Does anything really shoot out for you?
Well, it was Pride Day at the US Open, and I think that's new for this year, a new initiative. I mean, obviously Pride isn't new, but I think the US Open doing Pride Day is new. And I arrived home to Matt attending a Francis Tiafoe press conference with Billie Jean very much in tow. that had been very much part of Matt's project today. And I think, yeah, in the absence of any big tennis-related story, that might be my take home from today. And Matt's probably better placed to tell his tale of the day than I am.
Well, yeah, I've been speaking to players about that. More details in the newsletter. We like a teaser.
Oh no, have I accidentally teased content that we're not allowed to share on the pod?
Not at all.
We're allowed to tease it, we're just not allowed to say what they said.
Genuine accidental spoiler. Okay. Tease them, Matt. Tease away.
Well, I just think it's important to ask ATP players in particular, I think, about this, because you know, everyone knows the line that there's been no openly gay male player on the ATP tour ever, whereas the WTA, there've been lots. Why that discrepancy? Is there something about the culture at the ATP? I just think it's important every now and again to get the views of the players. Quite a lot of the answers, I think they're all coming from a really good place. They're just not looking beyond themselves in their answers so far. I mean, I should say I've still got a couple of players I do intend to speak to later, but anyway, I agree with Catherine. I think it's been a big thing today, Pride Day. The Australian Open has had one for quite a while, and the US Open has one, and yeah, I think it's a great initiative from the US Open.
So get across our newsletter. The link is in the show notes, and we'll be sending that out in the morning UK time, so a few hours after you listen to this, most likely. And yeah, you'll get our newsletter every day, which also features Matt's stat and our daily predictions.
I tell you what, David. Sorry to interrupt, but I think as much as all that was. Pride Day will remain a take home from today. The more glimpses I catch of Sloane Stephens, just in your words, David, schooling Coco Gauff here before our eyes, that might be a take home as well from this, because this is quite some performance. It's 6-4, 4-2 advantage Stephens on the Gauff serve at the moment, and the difference in. This is not to disparage Coco Gauff. She's at a completely different stage of her development to Sloane Stephens, but the difference in class is gaping. This is just brilliant stuff from Sloane Stephens, and you love to see it.
Mm. Yeah, the first set, her forehand, there's a sort of slingshot quality to it. And when she pulls it back and lets it go and she's on, I don't know, there's not too many players in the world who can have an answer to that. And it's quite interesting. I think it was Mardy Fish who tweeted something in defence of her today. And I do feel like Stephens is a player that doesn't necessarily get a lot of respect within the tennis world. And I don't really... I think the reason for that is because everybody knows how good she is and they want more. They expect more. They demand more. And I don't know whether that's fair, really. It's great to have loads and loads of talent, but demanding of somebody what they must do with that talent makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable, really.
I also think there's sort of insufficient nuance in telling her story, and I'm sure I'm guilty of that on Prime Video sometimes. You know, it's... The lazy narrative with Sloane Stephens is what could have been, exactly as you say, David. And maybe that is fair and true for some periods of her career. Absolutely. From what I hear, you know, her application and commitment to the sport has waxed and waned, which I find, you know, completely fair enough. You know, she's only accountable to herself. But that's not necessarily the story of her year this year. In fact, it definitely isn't the whole story of her year this year. You know, she suffered a tremendously difficult start to the year and to the season. She lost two relatives in quick succession to COVID-19, two very close relatives, and immediately went into solitary, hard quarantine in Melbourne. And I don't care who you are or how many millions you've got or what your level of commitment is to a sport. That is a trauma, really, to go through. And she's announced just today as a reminder of all of that, that she's launched a fund specifically in honour of those relatives that she lost this year.
Yeah, her grandparents, Doc and Glow. And she says the Doc and Glow scholarship will provide 20 promising students with $1,000 each to chase their dreams. Because her grandparents inspired her to get her degree while she was on the tour. And, you know, education was very important for them, and she wants to do her bit to help some more students. So, yeah, I think it's a really great, great thing that she's done there. And, yeah. I agree. I mean, I think Sloane Stephens can do this to kind of anyone. She can school them, in your words, David, which I think's right. She can expose them, because when she's at her best, she's so complete and so good. And actually, it looks like the matchup really favours her. You mentioned that forehand. I think if there's a weakness in the Gauff game, I think the forehand is probably it at this stage in her career. And Sloane Stephens has been comfortably winning those rallies and dominating those rallies, and it's just an awesome sight to see her playing like this.
Yeah, well, unless something dramatic changes here, her performance right now is going to be the performance of the day. And there have been a few. I mean, there have been some really good performances today. I thought Garbiñe Muguruza was very good against Andrea Petkovic, a player she'd lost to three times. She beat her handily today. And she's another one, isn't she? She's another one that you think when she's in that kind of form, blimey, how's anybody going to stop her? And that's it's a lovely thing about the women's tournament right now is they're all still there and now they're going to start clashing.
Yeah, Margarita's clashing with Azarenka in the next round, which is, I mean, that's a Grand Slam final, isn't it?
Yeah.
Easy. Yeah. They've played four times, two wins apiece. I mean, it couldn't be more perfect. I wouldn't want to be a scheduler in 2 days' time trying to place all those women's matches from the bottom half of the draw because, I mean, they're all worthy of Grand Slam quarterfinals at least, barring maybe one or two, but it's blockbuster. It's blockbuster absolutely everywhere. I mean, Muguruza, she had a tough draw. Vekic first round, but I think she's been played into form, quite honestly, and she's got that look about her. I don't know whether it means anything, but I hadn't quite realised with regards to that Vekic match that Vekic is now working with Sam Sumic.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of speculation that, you know, she really celebrated when she won that match, Muguruza, a couple of days ago. And nobody really knows the circumstances of her split from Sumic or the exact details of their relationship together. You know, a lot of people sort of just make a face of sort of, you know, a sort of sit to pass, gritted teeth face of sort of, you know, she looks happier now than when she was with Sam Sumic, certainly towards the latter stages of their relationship. So I don't know what went on, but she definitely looked really pleased to beat Donna Vekic with Sam Sumic in the box, didn't she? But, you know, I just wonder if this tough draw will end up helping her. Having said that, I thought Victoria Azarenka was really good today as well against a player in Jasmine Paolini that she said she thinks has top 10 potential. So, yeah. Who knows?
I wasn't convinced by Muguruza coming into this tournament just because it's traditionally been the Grand Slam where she struggled. I think she'd only once before reached the third round, hadn't she? And then that combined with this difficult draw just meant that she seemed like a kind of prime candidate to be a early week casualty to me. I've obviously got that totally wrong. And in the end, I think the combination of the tough draw and it being her most difficult slam has actually taken some of the pressure off. I don't think she was necessarily expecting as much of herself in New York as she normally does. She talked about trying to be less stressed, and she is playing some great tennis because, as you said, she had an 0-3 head-to-head against Petkovic today, who she beat in straight sets. And yeah, even her face at the end, it was immediately a picture of joy. And then suddenly it was like game face back on. She means business in this tournament. But yeah, Azarenka in the next round is just feels like yet another test for her. And the thing about Muguruza is she doesn't actually do a lot of winning titles. You know, she's obviously won two Grand Slam titles, but she's won relatively little in her career compared to a Halep or a Kvitova or something. So I think I remain unconvinced about her title credentials, but just the way she's looking is way better than I was expecting.
Yeah.
Just one last interjection about Sloane Stephens, who has just won, by the way, in pretty dismissive fashion, actually, in the end, 6-2 in the second over Coco Gauff, because on our screen currently is his friend of the pod, Pam Shriver, interviewing Sloane Stephens on court. And Pam has rainbow cuffs on her top, I presume in honour of Pride Day.
I think they might be sweatbands.
Oh.
They've been giving them out.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's still great.
It is.
Freebie or not. Well done, Pam.
Marvellous. Yeah, indeed. Elsewhere today, I'll go through a few of the women's draw results here and matches that have been set up as a result. Aryna Sabalenka won through. She won through comfortably on the scoreboard, but she took one heavy fall at one point in the match, which was really alarming, wasn't it? It was one of those where her feet just gave way as she hit a ball, just slid from under her, and she landed heavily on her side. But she seemed to bounce up, Catherine, all right, and finish the match, so fingers crossed.
Yeah, it didn't seem to affect her tennis at all. She won very straightforwardly. She had a break at that stage. incidentally, Zidanšek has done absolutely nothing since that run at the French Open, has she? Where she looked a real prospect. Didn't seem to affect her tennis. Just jogged towards the finish line, really. But she was icing the wrist and the hand at every change of ends, and I do wonder, and this is the pundits on Prime share this concern, that whether that's the sort of injury, the effects of which would be masked by adrenaline, and the full effects of which wouldn't be known until the next day, because it was a really nasty fall. I mean, it made you jolt and gasp to watch.
Yeah.
So I really cross my fingers, because I want Sabalenka Collins to be all the things that we know it could be.
Yes, Danielle Collins is the opponent. There's so many corkers. Let's just go through a few of these. Anja Burr, who had a very straightforward win today, is up against Elisa Mertens. There is Elina Svitolina taking on Daria Kasatkina. Apparently, that's a very one-sided head-to-head in favour of Svitolina, which I didn't know. Kasatkina came through against Vondrousova today. That's a good match, isn't it? Simona Halep. I'm very pleased that Simona Halep seems to be able to carry herself okay so far. I mean, she's been strapped up a bit, hasn't she? And the feeling is that she's not 100% fit, but she's still there and she's playing pretty well, and now takes on Elena Rybakina.
She's playing very aggressively, isn't she? I wonder if it's focusing the mind, that very heavy thigh strapping that she has. You know, if I'm going to do this, I have to do this a certain way.
She really stepped in the court and tried to take charge of the rallies. And actually, I think Halep has always struck me as a player who probably plays the best defence. So we sometimes think of her as a defensive player, but actually she does quite like to attack and quite like to control the rallies when she can. And she's doing that so well today. I've just been reminded of how much I like watching Simona Halep play. And I think she was getting a little frustrated at times because she was perhaps making a few more errors than usual, considering she was going for it so much, particularly in the first set. Her forehand was leaking a little bit, but she was very good overall. And actually, she said the one thing she was able to do while she was injured was work on her serve. And she's made some technical adjustments, I think maybe lowered the ball toss. And in the second set, her serve was faultless, really. And again, that's kind of been an area of Halep's game that has always been a little bit vulnerable, the serve. But if she's shored that up, that could be a sort of long-term benefit of a real, you know, injury that she had that kept her out of three big tournaments this summer. I'm impressed with Halep. She's now got Rybakina, who, speaking of serving, was just pummeling aces today against Caroline Garcia. And in Hannah's words, she's happening, Rybakina. And I think her against Halep, they met previously in the Dubai final of 2020, just before the COVID shutdown. And that was 7-6 in the third to Halep. It was a fantastic match. It's sort of a classic contrast of styles, which is kind of what we love to see. So, yeah, I mean, add that to the list of incredible matches. I feel like we've been building for a long time for a third round like this in the women's game. We've obviously had a lot of great matches, but it's not quite come together like this as a draw where all of them seem to be happening. And you sort of sometimes have to whisper it quietly about a potential match happening, and now it's like shout it from the rooftops because they're all happening and it's going to be great.
Yeah, I can't wait for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday now, whatever we've got all these matches to look forward to. On Halep as well, I do wonder about that, whether for this specific tournament that change in tack and need to change might be a difference maker for her, because she's been super fit, she's been an amazing mover, she's had all the attributes, but those things have just not worked at the US Open over the years, have they?
Yeah, and obviously being injured is not a good thing at a Grand Slam tournament, but being fit at the US Open has never worked out particularly well for her. you know, she always comes into the US Open, always has previously, off the back of an incredibly intense summer. You know, her main focus has always been the clay court season. We know the year that she won Wimbledon. Wimbledon was the focus then, and there was, you know, an enormous sigh of relief afterwards. I'm not sure she's ever come into the US Open feeling like she's got a full tank of gas. And I know you could make that case about every player at the US Open. That's part of the joy of it, kind of the brutality of watching people exhaust the last of their canister for the year, I suppose. But I think that's possibly a bit more true of Simona Halep than others, and she perhaps finds New York a bit more exhausting than other people do. But, you know, as much as having an injury is overall a bad thing, it could, you know, things being different for her at the US Open could, you know, who knows? I don't. She annoyingly doesn't feature anywhere in my predictions.
One player who didn't get to play today is Naomi Osaka, because her match ended up being a walkover. Her opponent, Olga Danilovic, was forced to withdraw from their match. She had what was described as a non-COVID-related virus, viral infection. So get well soon to her. Osaka gets a day off. She now faces...
And I'm not sure that's good for Osaka. I must say, I feel like she needs matches. I mean, you know, maybe she gained a lot from just that first round, where I think certainly her second set was stronger than her first set. But I don't know, it feels like she needs some rhythm, she needs some confidence, she needs some, just matches. And I think sometimes getting a walkover can actually, what's the opposite of a blessing in disguise? One of those.
One of those. Yeah.
Just quickly on that statement from Olga Danilovic, the reason she specified non-COVID related illness is because in the brief period after it was announced that she had withdrawn ahead of that match for, quote, medical reasons, that was the official reason given, there was a lot of speculation about the specifics of those medical reasons, because that was also the official wording of the statement for Gilles Simon's withdrawal, which we know was because he was a close contact for somebody that had tested positive for COVID-19. And those players that are unvaccinated and are deemed close contacts are automatically removed from the draw, whereas vaccinated players, obviously anybody that tests positive, removed from the draw, but unvaccinated close contacts are also removed from the draw. And a lot of the build-up to that Olga Danilovic match involved, to a lot that I read, there was a really good New York Times piece about the mentoring that Novak Djokovic has done with Olga Danilovic. They're really close, apparently. So there was a period of about half an hour where everybody was speculating that Olga Danilovic might have been a close COVID contact, and therefore Novak Djokovic might have been a close COVID contact. And it sort of dawned on everybody that it's not completely impossible that it could end up being that thwarts his quest for the calendar slam. It is a considerable risk that he is taking. And I know, you know, he's aware of the consequences of his vaccination stance, but it just, you know, the potential scenarios just suddenly sort of presented themselves to people, and it was interesting.
Yeah, it was. But subsequently, she made that statement to say that it wasn't COVID related. So get well soon to her. On the men's side, we had victory for Daniil Medvedev in very, very straightforward fashion. I mean, he is looking, Matt, like he looked until he ran into a camera the other week.
Yes, precisely. He's barely giving up games, is he? He's won his first two matches very, very easily. Today against Dominic Kupfer, I watched that match. Jim Courier was commentating on it, and he said he felt Dominic Kupfer played a really good match and wasn't close to being good enough. And that was how it felt, to be honest. Medvedev just had an answer for everything. It was clinical, ruthless, efficient. It was just everything that you want, really, in the first week of a slam. And he's looking so impressive. It's so different to the 2019 run he had, where there was, you know, every match was a drama, whether it was his physical state, whether it was his relationship with the crowd, whether it was an actual tense match. So far, he's just cruising through this draw, and he's got a let's call it a good draw in the next round with Pablo Andujar. I think you would take that in the third round. No disrespect to him, he's done very well to get this far, but he's not really particularly at home on hard courts, and I would have thought Medvedev would overwhelm him. It's probably the fourth round onwards where Medvedev's draw starts to get interesting, because he would play the winner of Alexei Popperin and Dan Evans, who I'm pretty sure you both watched today. And I think that would be a legitimate test. Popperin has pushed Medvedev in the past, and Evans seems to be liking these conditions in New York, the slightly faster courts, and he just has a game that can disrupt in a way that, you know, Medvedev hasn't faced one of those opponents yet.
Yeah. Yeah, did watch Evans, and he won through today against Marcus Garon, it turns out you pronounce his name, which I didn't think was how it should be pronounced at all. I thought it was Giron. And then we played the sound of it on the ATP website, and that was how he pronounced his own name. So anyway, that's what we ended up calling him on Five Live. And it was 6-4, 7-6, 2-6, 6-3 for Dan Evans, who came out much sharper than he did a couple of days ago against Thiago Monteiro. And then at the end, Catherine, he was quite choked up, wasn't he, Dan Evans, in his interview, and it was, I found that quite revealing, really, as to his state of mind, and I suppose just the experience of being out on the road all the time. And he had COVID-19, he's had a pretty terrible run of form and losses, and he hasn't been feeling his best, and turns out he's been on his own as well, or at least not with his girlfriend at this tournament, and it seems to have all. Yeah, he let everybody in a little bit there for a moment.
Yeah, his bottom lip was going, wasn't it? And Anne Kjelthavog and I in the Prime Video studio, we weren't quite prepared for the nature of that interview that he gave on the court after that match, and it really got us choked up. Actually, the mention of his girlfriend Alea, I think her name is. Yeah, he had to take a moment, didn't he? And he had a lump in his throat, and it was really, really moving, actually. And you know, we've talked a lot here. I've talked a lot about it on Prime Video about the challenging summer that he's had, particularly in the context of this having been the best season of his career. The fact that actually this summer period has been so disappointing, and I think. Well, Greg Rozetsky certainly thinks it's all down to having suffered from COVID-19. It's just, you know, he's got to where he's got to by, you know, rinsing those fine margins, becoming this just well-oiled, well-honed tour machine, you know, week in, week out, just producing and incrementally getting better and better. And, you know, losing a few of those increments is a massive deal for Dan Evans. He doesn't have a big easy weapon that he can rely upon, and you know, he talked about in his round one match that he of course won through in the end, experiencing bad headaches in that, and it must be really disconcerting to, you know, I don't know whether that's COVID-19 related, I don't know, but I do know that he's having a rocky road back to full physical fitness without there being anything specifically wrong with him. And that must be so disconcerting for somebody, for an athlete that is used to feeling in control of their fitness and their body. And his yeah, his reaction after that win, I think, was a real glimpse into how emotionally tough this summer has been. Yeah, it was very moving.
And he now faces Alexei Popyrin, who beat another man who'd obviously suffered from COVID-19 in the past. And we'll never really know, I don't think, how big a factor that has played in Grigor Dimitrov's decline physically. He's had a lot of retirements. He's had a lot of injuries. He's had a lot of ill health, really. Hasn't been the same player over the last year or so in terms of consistency. And it was 7-6, 7-6, and then 4-love retired. I think there's a foot problem for Dimitrov. But good win for Popyrin, and he's really made use of the conditions there. Evans was saying that they'd played once at Queen's not that long ago. Evans had won that comfortably, but it's a very different situation because of the movement on the hard courts, and he expects Popyrin to be a much tougher opponent this time.
Not the movement.
Not the movement.
Pablo Andujar and Philip Kohlschreiber ensured the movement will not feature tonight's pod.
And actually, that moves me on, Catherine, to something I wanted to mention, really. Looking at the bottom half of the draw in the men's is what's been more or less complete. There's two or three spaces still to be completed. And a couple of them are big names. As Stefanos Tsitsipas is about to play, for instance, and there's Kevin Anderson against Diego Schwartzman. They've done things. There's a lot of players in this bottom half of the draw who are pretty difficult to tell our listeners much about for me. I've seen names, but I tell you, I mean, compare that bottom half of the draw to the women's draw, and it is stark, the difference in terms of name recognisability.
Yeah, I'm going to name some names, and I want you both to declare honestly to me if you could pick them out in a police lineup. To my knowledge, they've committed no crimes. This is entirely hypothetical. Alex Molchan.
No.
No idea who it is.
Henry Laaksonen.
From Slovakia. I know that. Oh, I'm clicking on
I'll tell you what. If we're doing fun facts about these people that we can't pick out of a lineup, Alex Molchan is into the third round of the US Open. Those round one and round two match wins were his first ever tour level match wins on a hard court.
Wow. Goodness.
Henry Laaksonen.
Yeah, yeah. I know him.
No, not know the name.
I don't know what he looks like. No, I don't.
That's the game.
If you lined him up, no, I wouldn't know which one he was.
I think I could pick Laaksonen out, yeah.
Okay. Bottic van der Zandschulp. We know that David commentated one of his matches at Wimbledon. You should be saying yes to this, David.
Oh, dear. I did do a match of his, didn't
I?
We watched it.
Right
pig's ear of it. Yeah, I think I'd be all right with him, I think.
Yeah, I think so. But only because I watched a little bit of him today against Casper Ruud.
Peter Goyovchik.
Oh, yeah. But I can't. I mean, I can't spell his name.
David, Peter Goyovchik.
But I know Goyovchik. He's been around.
He's in a lineup with a lot of other sort of athletic-looking men in their mid-20s.
Tell you what, I'm clicking on these as we go. No, I mean, the answer is no. They're all ranked way outside the world's top 100.
Yeah, yeah. We're not being disrespectful here. Well, I hope we're not being disrespectful. These are massively surprised names, even in the third round of a slam.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think the biggest sort of shock result today was Bottic van der Zandschulp beating Casper Ruud. I mean, eighth seed at this tournament, Casper Ruud. And yes, I know people will point to the fact he's mainly built his results on clay, and he obviously won those three back-to-back-to-back tournaments after Wimbledon on clay. But he'd actually just reached the quarterfinals of Canada and Cincinnati back-to-back. He was starting to have some results on a hard court. So I do think that is a disappointing loss for him in the second round of the US Open, in a section of the draw which was actually, on paper at least, fairly kind one to be in. I think he's got to be pretty disappointed by that.
By the way, Van der Zandschulp faces Facundo Bagnis, who is also not a player I know an awful lot about.
All the big names are in that section.
I actually couldn't pick him out.
He's 80 in the world, for your info.
Bagnis
sort of
beat Trungaliti of being in his grandma's car at the US Open, on the way to the French Open fame. Never heard of again since. Until today.
No, indeed. The couple of matches at the top of that lower section of the draw do feature players that we know, and there was one lovely little bit of hype given out by Francis Tiafo after he won his match very comfortably today against Guido Pella, and he's now facing Andre Rublev, and he let us in on that kind of "I don't look at my draw" type of comment and made it look nonsense. Because he said, the moment I saw my draw, I knew I'd got Andre Rublev in the third round if I could get through the first couple. And I want it. I really want him. And he made it very clear he's absolutely pumped up to the hilt to face Andre Rublev, which he's never faced before. And I love that. He's coming for him, he says.
I think he could cause him problems. I mean, he needs to have a good day, and I think he needs to have a really good game plan. I think, you know, there's no secrets with Rublev, are there? He does his thing really, really well, but you can make his thing malfunction a bit if you've got a really solid game plan. I think he can make that fun. I think he can certainly make it fun for the viewer. I suspect even if Rublev wins, he won't have a lot of fun in that match, no, one way or another. I think
can you name a match where Andre Rublev has had fun?
Ooh. He doesn't look like he has fun that often to me. I mean, maybe that's harsh, but
have I ever seen Rublev look like he's having fun?
And look, having fun is not the aim. You know, I think it's perfectly okay that he doesn't necessarily have fun on court. Actually, I think he had quite a bit of fun at the Olympics, didn't he?
I was just going to say, but then he sort of was just being put in his place by Anastasia Pavlyuchenko for the whole time, and rightly so.
Which was very entertaining.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Just a word on last night, because when we came off air last night, we were watching that Novak Djokovic against Holger Rune match, and then Bianca Andreescu started shortly after we finished recording. First of all, Djokovic, I mean, he ended up winning straightforwardly. He did lose that second set, but thereafter he dominated, and Rune's body just completely betrayed him. He started to suffer from cramp, and Djokovic forced him into that, didn't he, with the way he moves him around and all that sort of thing. It was but it was a bit uncomfortable, some of it, wasn't it, because the crowd were really going for Rune. They liked him, they young 18-year-old going for his winners and all the rest of it, and it sounded like there was booing going on, which later on was explained that the crowd were shouting "Rune," but it didn't really sound like that at the time. It sounded like "boo." So anyway, that was the explanation given, was that they're actually chanting his name. Djokovic was pretty put out by it all. He thought they were booing him, and I mean, at the very least, it wasn't the warmest atmosphere out there for him, to be quite honest. And I think that took him aback, and one or two other people aback, that here he is going for this incredible achievement of the calendar Grand Slam, and he's not exactly getting the warmest reception in the world.
And he left the court without doing his usual celebration to all four sides of the stadium. I think in the moment it felt very hostile, perhaps, when they thought it was booing. By the end, I think Djokovic had realised that they were shouting "Rune," and that just felt like a late night crowd coming up with something and sort of doing it for the rest of the match. I don't think it was anti-Djokovic. I don't think they were a particularly pro-Djokovic crowd. But I think as the tournament progresses, I think John Wertheim said, look, it's going to be easy to tell in the next match because there's no way you can mistake Greek sport for booing. And I think what we'll see is just a sort of fairly neutral reaction. I think there is some appreciation for what Djokovic is going for. I think that might grow as the tournament goes on. But yeah, I'm not sure there's necessarily huge love for him. And look, we don't need to get into all the reasons for that now, but that isn't brand new.
Yeah, I thought it was about an 18-year-old who they'd never heard of, who was playing really well, who was pushing somebody they did know really well, and was the world number one and all the rest of it. And they were just in the moment, is what I felt.
A few honey juices down.
Yeah. That was my feeling.
Oh, those were the days.
I don't know. I wonder how many people that go know the whole thing about him going for this achievement. I don't know how big a deal that is to the average ticket holder in a night session at the US Open. Certainly at the start of the tournament. I think it might grow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always shocked by sort of overheard at insert tennis event, you know.
But less so at the US Open. Am I imagining an experience, David, with being with you at a bar and just some casual people? We were watching tennis at the bar and some casual people there sort of engaging us in conversation and seeming to know everything. Obviously, this is one conversation which may or may not be imagined with one couple. Not scientific. But I don't know. I feel like I've got a well of anecdotes in my mind which I've used as evidence that the US Open crowd probably...
Surely they know.
I think they know. I think they know. And maybe not everybody would know sort of as they're walking through the gates, but I think by the time they're sitting down and they've heard chatter around them and, you know, they've Googled the players that they're about to see, I don't know. I feel like no one's getting to the end of the match and not knowing, unless you've had a lot of honey juices.
My sister did once hear someone at Wimbledon ask whether it was knockout.
Oh, God.
That was a low point.
Oh, God.
The other match that was going on last night was Bianca Andreescu, who, when I went to bed, was just starting off her match against Victoria Golubic and was hitting the ball really hard and looking really good. And I thought, oh, this will be straight sets. I wake up and it's... people are talking about an epic that I have to go and look up. So I did. And, she won in the end 7-5 in the third, despite being a break of serve down, looking in real trouble against a player playing out of her mind. But I don't know. How do you come out of that feeling about Andreescu? Encouraged or concerned for her in terms of her prospects at this tournament?
Slightly more encouraged than I was after Cincinnati. I can't quite remember off the top of my head who she lost to in Cincinnati. But it was her first match, wasn't it? I think encouraged. I mean, I don't think I've adjusted what I think too much on the basis of yesterday. I mean, there aren't many tennis players that upon waking up at 5 a.m. I would be aware of the fact that they'd been playing a night session tennis match and risk checking my phone for their result with the full knowledge that if they happened to be in a thrilling third set, I would probably sacrifice sleep to switch it on. Well, I did that with Bianca Andreescu at 5 a.m. UK time this morning, and I ended up tuning in for the latter stages of that match and not regretting it, especially as I was in the company of Mary Carrillo commentary. And she was so emotional after it. And
yeah, Andreescu was sobbing, really, wasn't she?
She was. She
had to take a while until she could do her interview.
Yeah, she was sobbing into a towel, and it gave the director plenty of time to cut away to Coco Andreescu in the arms of Maria Andreescu, who are both iconic as individuals, iconic as a double act. It's all wonderful. I don't know. Help me, Matt.
Well, I got reeled in by Andreescu even before the tournament had started by her press conference, because she just sounded so much more upbeat than I'd heard her recently. I remember that press conference at Wimbledon, which was really quite sad. And as you said, the results she had in the lead up tournaments to the US Open weren't brilliant. She didn't seem to be ready for a big run at the US Open. And yet in that press conference, she was talking with a real glow about how much better she was feeling about the work she's been putting in, and I just believed her. And so I did always think, though, that Golubic in the first round would be tough because, you know, she's having a great season and reached the Wimbledon quarterfinals. And so the fact that Andreescu has got through that, I think, is encouraging. There was a moment in the second set where she had a medical timeout. She got the trainer on. I think she was feeling ill and nauseous.
Sickness, yeah.
Yeah, rather than a physical injury. So, you know, obviously bad that she felt that way, but better than an injury. That is still the big concern with her. And, you know, something Mary Carrillo said in that commentary was, a couple of years ago, a defining feature of Andreescu was her step-uppiness, was how Mary put it. And she had that in both the first set. She was a breakdown last night. She raised her game when she needed to, and she did the same thing in the third set. I think the next step for her is to try and win a match in straight sets. I mean, you know, I think she needs that. I think it was kind of her super quality a couple of years ago, winning in three sets. It hardened her. Now I'm not necessarily sure that it does. I think she needs convincing quick victories in a way.
A slam actually could be easier for her than a thousand event where
she gets the days off.
Yeah.
And actually, it was noticeable, I thought, watching her, that she was playing way more aggressively than I remembered. I think of Andreescu as having a very complete game, and look, she still does, but actually she said she has tried to simplify things. I think she was getting really caught up with her results this year because off the back of 2019, she expects that from herself, but she wasn't actually delivering on those results, and she needed a simple game plan that she could rely on. And I thought we saw a little glimpse of that last night. There wasn't the sort of moonballing. There wasn't the changes of pace. It was a lot more just sort of the power game. And I think if she gets that right, that probably will stand her in good stead to win convincingly. But yeah, it's not quite there yet, but let's hope it comes.
So that pretty much sums up the last day and a bit and brings you up to date. Tomorrow, everything starts on the Arthur Ashe Stadium at 12 local time, so 5 UK, with Ash Barty against Clara Towson. Then there's Zverev against Ramos Vinolas. In the evening session, it is that Djokovic against Griekspoor match first up, followed by Pliskova against Anisimova. Louis Armstrong has got to Bencic against Trevisan. There's Kvitova against Kristina Pliskova. There is Gael Monfils against Steve Johnson. And then Andreescu's the night match, actually, first up against Lauren Davis on the Armstrong court, with Shapovalov following that. There's loads of matches on the outside courts as well, including Emma Raducanu tomorrow as well. I'm just having a little look to see which court she's on. Oh, court 10, first up at 11 in the morning, UK, New York time. So that's 4 p.m. In the UK, Emma Raducanu against Zheng Shuai. So that'll be the starting point for your coverage, I imagine, Catherine. You're on from, what, 3.30, is it?
3.30, half an hour build-up. Raducanu up first, yeah.
Yeah.
Easy.
Well, that'd be great.
Easy editorial great. Decisions for that
well,
bit, anyway.
We'll look forward to that. Indeed. Okay, well, we very much look forward to all that. Our mascot for this week is Francis the Cat. We have our own mascots.
Hey,
Rogues.
Hey, hey.
Yeah.
Photos of Francis have come in, David.
Oh, have they?
Oh, oh yes.
Francis is amazing.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
He's a handsome chap.
When am I going to get to see these photos of Francis?
Well, you need some time to prepare yourself because he's startlingly beautiful.
Okay, well, get yourself subscribed to our
newsletter.
With
great literary taste also.
We'll stick a photo in there or whack one up on the old social media, Instagram and Twitter. We're on all of those. So there's Francis, there's Rogue, there's Scouser Mousel, there's Zeus. They're all our mascots. There's Billie Jean King for Billie Jean the dog. There's Chris Albert Lee, our executive producer, the top bloke. And Matt, we got some shout-outs.
Christy Wellum.
All right, Christy.
Hello, Christy. Like Christy Turlington.
Yes.
Matt doesn't know who that is, David.
Mm. He's shaking his head.
Mm. Move on. Mm. Hello,
thanks
Christy.
For so much
thank
for your support,
you.
Christy. You're a ledge.
Am I allowed to ask who? Or you tell me after?
She was one of the, you know, the Naomi Campbell, Kate Moss crop of Cindy Crawford. Oh. Or Cindy Crawford was slightly
supermodels.
The original supermodels.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on, Matt.
AB Havens.
Oh.
Oh.
So AB Havens.
Those are initials, are they?
Yes.
An author of sort of young adult fiction?
Could
probably.
AB.
Do we know what AB stands for?
Cricketer?
Yes.
No, just AB.
You didn't ask.
Left to our imagination.
Okay. Well, AB, top bloke? Yeah. Thanks ever so much for your support. Any more?
And Catherine Willerton.
Strong.
Yeah.
Very strong. C.
Thanks, Catherine.
C or a K? C.
C? Oh, yeah. C.
Wow. What an ending. Thank you, Catherine.
Lovely. Marvellous. Thanks ever so much for your support. And with that, we will leave you here on the Tennis Podcast and be back with you again tomorrow. Do sign up to that newsletter. Do tell your friends about us if you know anybody who might like the Tennis Podcast. And we will be back tomorrow with another one. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com code program.